Welcome to Success Secrets, the podcast where we dive into the inspiring stories of individuals who have overcome obstacles and achieved remarkable success in their professional lives. Get ready to be inspired and discover their secrets to success. Welcome to Success Secrets. Today, we're delighted to have Anne as our guest, with over 20 years in the financial services industry. Anne's journey took a new direction when she encountered mental health first aid in 2018. Retraining as a MHFA England instructor, she shifted gears to become a workplace mental health and well-being consultant. Now, Anne passionately teaches mental health courses, delivers impactful talks, and provides career mentorship across the corporate world. Join us as we explore Anne's inspiring journey of personal and professional growth. Hello, Anne, and welcome to Success Secrets podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. And thank you for inviting me on. It's lovely to chat with you again.
Of course, it's such a pleasure to chat with you as well. I can always see you're doing great things, and I love following your journey.
Oh, and you, goodness me. Yeah, I can't wait to watch your TED Talk. I'm waiting for the link. Send me the link.
I will. Once it's available, for sure, I will. So, let's jump straight into the questions. Can you share a bit about your background and how you first got started in the finance industry?
Yes, absolutely. In a nutshell, I completely fell into it without any intention. I was young, I was living in London for the first time in the big city, and it was all about, you know, who you knew, who was getting paid well, and it was all about tech in the finance industry. So everyone at that moment in the late 90s who was getting into IT wanted to be in financial services because that's where the money was. So I'm not going to lie to you. That's where I went. I followed the money, and that's how I ended up working for an investment bank at the time. So I then spent 12 years at Credit Suisse. So that was how I got started. It really was just falling into it and, you know, somebody suggesting, why don't you go along for this interview? And I was young and I just said yes to everything. So that's probably a good lesson, actually. Just say yes to everything and see where it leads you.
Just say yes and then learn along the way and see what happens.
Exactly. And I totally did. I just blagged my way along. I learned everything from scratch. I knew nothing about technology at the time and nothing about financial services. So you just kind of learn as you go along because it changes so fast. If you spend time learning something too in depth, the industry moves on and you're always behind the curve. Mm-hmm. You're nodding a lot. I know you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, because even in within the space of a couple of months, there'll be a new advancement, and you just have to keep up. You have to keep up with the trends. You have to keep up with the innovations. Otherwise, you're going to fall behind and then get left behind as well. And I love how you said that you fell into it as well, because I actually fell into it too. And like you, I followed the money. That's where the money is, finance, right? So I started when I was 18, and here I am today. Interesting. And what inspired you to pursue a leadership role in finance? I know you mentioned you was at Credit Suisse for quite a while. And what was the most rewarding part about your career?
So I was ambitious, and I wanted to continue climbing the ladder. I enjoy organizational roles. I like being the coordinator. I like leading from the front. So that was always coming naturally to me. It's not that I had a sort of ego that drove me to be a leader. It was more about I'm a bit of a control freak. I like to be in control of what's going on. And that was really what sort of drove me. And I was ambitious to, like I said, climb the ladder, earn more money, you know, realizing that things can change at any time. So earn the money when you can, because, you know, life passes you by really, really quickly. So the first sort of 5 years of my career were quite slow. There was a lot going on at the time around UK fair pay, about, you know, women being paid equally to men. So that was an issue for me at the beginning. But once I got into that sort of junior management role, things really took off from there. And I think the best thing that happened to me at Credit Suisse was really when I moved from IT into a more business management role. And that's where I really found my sort of comfort zone. I really enjoyed that kind of role, working in big departments, supporting senior business heads to drive their strategy forward and seeing lots of results. So that was really rewarding for me. Every day when I went into the office, I had to feel a sense of achievement. I had to feel satisfied. And if I couldn't leave the office until I felt that I'd, you know, achieved something that day. So I think, you know, in your 20s, you're young, ambitious, you've got energy, you can still go out partying the night before and still get into work the next day and be your best. So I really took advantage of that. And yeah, by the time I was 30, I think I'd done pretty well and I felt satisfied with my career. But that ambitious side of me really pushed me on. And that's when I actually left Credit Suisse and left the UK. And that's when my career really started to take off, I would say.
Okay, interesting, interesting. So in terms of like your career taking off, what would you say are the key lessons that you've learned about effective leadership in the finance sector? And what did you learn about areas that have helped you to propel in your career as well?
You know, looking back in hindsight is a wonderful thing. I knew it at the time, but not consciously. But I've always tried to be very human, very personable, very approachable, and fair and understanding. And sometimes in certain industries, certainly in the corporate world, that can be seen as a weakness. It can be seen as something that will hold you back. But in my situation, it certainly didn't. And I'm glad I took that approach. I could also be quite hard and demanding, because that was the industry I was in. You had to be demanding. It's competitive. Deadlines are short. But that created a bit of a conflict for me, actually, because naturally I'm not like that. So I think the human aspect of things we often forget about. And I'd like to see more focus on that in the industry. Certainly my favourite leaders or my most inspiring leaders were the ones that were human. They weren't perfect. You know, they had a good sense of humour. They were approachable. They were kind. And those things mean a lot to me and meant a lot to me back then as well, especially as a young girl coming into the industry, you know, feeling like a rabbit in the headlights. So I would say that, you know, that's really important, and that's men as well as women. So inspiring women leaders as well as men leaders, it's the ones that were really human and didn't forget who they were and where they came from, right? Because we all came from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So true, so true. And to rewind that back, because the finance industry has obviously been very male dominated, and especially even more dominated when you first started. How was it for you at the beginning, and what are the struggles that you faced?
At the beginning, it was, I mentioned earlier about fair pay. That was certainly a challenge at the time. We had started to talk about diversity in the early noughties. And I certainly went down that route and got involved in a lot of D&I initiatives. I was leading lots of women's networks at the time, doing a lot of mentoring, and that was really important to me. My views on that have evolved over time, and now I'm in my mid-40s. I can understand a bit more about why women tend to drop out of all sorts of careers at a certain age. You know, we go off to have our babies, and when you've had a baby, life looks different, you know, work, your attitude towards work and career changes. So my views on things have very much changed in the last 20 years around diversity and inclusion. Of course, we should include everybody and everybody should have equal opportunities. But I think sometimes it can be taken too far. At the end of the day, the best person for the job is the best person for the job. And we shouldn't focus too much on why women aren't making it to the top or the quotas and things like that, because there's lots and lots of reasons why. And all the women that I speak to that end up leaving the industry don't leave the industry because they didn't get to that managing director or CEO position. They left because they had children, they wanted to be with their families, or, you know, they realized there's more to life than being, you know, a laptop screen for 12, 15 hours a day. So my attitude towards D&I has softened over the years, but it does mean that I'm not for complete equality in the workplace. But sadly, I think a lot of the social programming and social engineering in our society, unfortunately, that has crept into the workplace. And it's actually, I feel sorry for the guys now, the men who are struggling just as much as women, and they face the same problems that women do. You know, they have the same issues with their confidence, with all the stuff that we bring with us, all the baggage that we've got, you know, issues from our childhood, imposter syndrome, all of this kind of stuff. Men experience that just as much as women. So I think as I'm getting a little bit older, I'm starting to see things slightly differently. And probably if I went back to my 20s, I'd probably try and keep more of an open mind about some of these initiatives. They come and they go and they change. And if we get too focused and too, if we pay these things too much focus and attention, we're forgetting about what we're all there to do, really, which is to build our business, you know, give our clients the best possible service we can give them and make money at the end of the day. And I think the businesses that are forgetting that are the ones that probably are going to suffer in the long run.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like D&I is definitely such a touchy subject for everyone. And there are sometimes it can go a bit far, but at the end of the day, I truly believe that within the workforce, everyone should have equal opportunities and equal rights. Like, for example, if a woman's just had a baby and she wants to go back into the workforce after taking her maternity leave, she shouldn't be discriminated just because she's had a baby. Or like a pregnant woman, for example, they should still be given equal rights. And if they're good enough for the job and they're going to do a good job, then why would you not hire them, right? So there's also that. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure at the moment men are also experiencing this as well, because a lot of companies are saying, okay, we need to make sure we hire women, but it should also depend on the person that's right for the job, that's going to do the best out of the job as well. But then it also comes back to on the hiring process, because of unconscious bias. Like, are you hiring them because in your mind is it unconscious bias? So that's another thing to be aware of, right? So there's so much elements to it, isn't there?
It's a complete minefield. I hear it from all sides. You know, I was just speaking to a gentleman yesterday that I mentor, and he was really struggling to find a job over the last year. And, you know, he's been asked questions such as, have you experienced any work-related stress in the last X number of years, you know, as he's applying for a job, or asking for his pronouns and things like that. And he's like, what has this got to do with anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating for him, because he's not even getting to interview stage. And this was this is a leader in his field. Mm-hmm. And he's not getting to interview stage now. So I feel for him, I do.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. And everyone has their own different points of view. And it's always interesting to hear from different ages, different genders and everything like that, to see what their opinions are as well. And in terms of your career, can you share a particularly challenging moment that happened in your career and how you managed to get through it?
Well, you just mentioned it there, which is maternity leave. And this was a particularly difficult time of my career. Going off to have a baby and then coming back into the workplace, I came back to work way too soon. I was under pressure, not from anybody else, but the social pressure to return to work. I'm going to say quite quickly, but I came back after about 6 months. And really, I wasn't ready to come back. I was still breastfeeding. My body wasn't back in shape yet. I wasn't sleeping through the night, every night yet. Yeah. The baby still needed her mother. And I put her into a nursery and I went back to work and it broke my heart. And there was lots of changes going on at work, lots of reorgs. And my manager changed at the time. I ended up being managed by a woman in New York. And I just had a really, really crappy experience, to be honest. And sadly, this is more common than not. So since I left and I spoke openly about my experience of bullying and, you know, toxic workplaces, so many of my old network came out to speak to me about it and said, you know, yes, I experienced similar things. And so that's really tough for women to go through that. And it's important to give new mums as much support as possible to get back into the workplace if that's where they want to be. Now, I didn't want to be there, but I thought I did because I've been told for, you know, years, decades, that women can have it all. You know, you can have your babies and go back to work, all of this kind of stuff. And so I thought that's what I should do. I didn't realize that choice. And I know one of your questions was going to be around if you could go back to your 21-year-old self, what would you say to yourself? And it would be that. It would be that you've got a choice. There is always a choice. So don't feel pressured into doing anything. If you want to go back to work after having your kids, absolutely do it. If you don't, then don't. You can work out a way. You don't, you know, don't feel like you got to go back because of the money. You know, I left my career. I basically retired in 2020 and left my well-paid job and my 20-year career and had to completely change my lifestyle. I had to leave London, leave the UK. Not had to. I wanted to, but I had to change a lot about the way that I lived because I accepted that I'm not going to have that salary anymore, so I need to make some changes in my life. But it was the best thing that I ever did. And I could only do that because I did a lot of coaching and work on myself to realize that I had a choice. And I think, you know, if we start talking about mental health, many of the stress-related illnesses that people develop when they're in the workplace is because they feel like they don't have a choice and they're trapped. So that was my experience in 2017 when I returned to work after having my daughter. And it was really a challenging time for me. And it's what started me on my mental health journey.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's very interesting. And I feel like, especially in the corporate world, there's just so much pressure to be a certain way, to act a certain way, to behave a certain way. And if you're outside of that window, then you're judged quite harshly for it. Or like people are going to talk behind your backs and everything like that. So it's almost like you're put into a box and expected to be this way. And it's not, and it's almost like you can't really be yourself as well. And I also feel like a woman has decisions, and even men, like if a woman wants to stay at home and look after a kid, she should be able to do that and she shouldn't be judged for it either. And if she wants to be a stay-at-home mum, that's her prerogative as well. Or if a woman wants to go straight into work or she doesn't want to have kids, then that's up to her as well. I feel like people are just judging so much about what other people are doing when they should just be focusing on themselves.
Yeah, that's put really, really well. Absolutely. And you have to have a thick skin in the industry. You know, people do talk, people do criticize, they judge, they have opinions. And if you take it too much to heart, then you're probably in the wrong place. You've really got to toughen up. And I hate to say that because it shouldn't be like that. But certainly I experienced a lot of that. And, you know, I'm a sensitive soul. You know, I struggled with that. Yeah, you do have to grow a very thick skin.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And what would you say, because, I mean, you've had a very interesting journey in the finance industry. What other struggles have you faced in terms of discrimination and everything like that whilst you was working in the city?
I don't think I really ever struggled with discrimination. I think actually as a woman, things were moving in my favour. Mm-hmm. So I think I took full advantage of that, you know, and I really did put myself forward. I put myself out there. I put myself into roles that I wasn't really qualified for or prepared for, but I was ambitious and I went for it. And I think, again, being my younger self, I was more confident back then to do those kind of things. Now I like to stay in my comfort zone. But yeah, back then, I don't think I can really say that I was discriminated against overall. I was fortunate that there was so much focus on diversity and putting more women into senior roles that I probably did get roles that other people were more qualified for, meaning men were more qualified for, but I got the role because I was a woman. And this was happening all over the place. And it probably, I haven't been in the industry for 4 years, but it's probably still happening now, from what I can tell. So I'm certainly not, woe is me, you know, I was disadvantaged. I wasn't, I took advantage of it. That's probably my advice. Just take advantage of it. Do, you know, just go for everything. Go, don't hold yourself back, because we're our own worst enemy sometimes. So just go for it, whether you're qualified for the role or not. Just put yourself out there and just have a thick skin, because you're not going to do well in everything. I mean, certainly I saw discrimination happening, and I certainly felt like, going back to when I returned from maternity leave, there was definitely some discrimination there, because I wasn't able to bring my full self to work. You know, I was breastfeeding, I was going to the toilet and pumping milk. There's no way I could have taken that role back on full time. So they did end up sort of sidelining me and pushing me out, which in the end was fine by me, and it was better for me in the long run. So definitely that happens. But I kind of took advantage really of the situation, and I would encourage everybody to do that. You know, it's a competitive industry. That's what you've got to do.
Yeah. You just got to go for it. Put yourself out there and just learn on the job, right? Yeah. And there was a statistic that I read that men are more likely to apply for jobs that they haven't even ticked lots of boxes for, that they're not even qualified enough for, where women, when they're applying for jobs, they have to tick almost every box. So that's also interesting. So for any woman listening to this, if you're thinking of applying for a role and you haven't ticked all the boxes, just apply for it, see what happens.
Yeah, I think we're all nodding along at that. I've heard that before. That came from a study quite some time ago. Yeah, men are more risk takers than women. They'll tick all those boxes, and then when they get in the role, they'll work it out. Mm-hmm. And us girls should do that a bit more too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And so, again, you've had a very interesting journey from finance and onto your new business venture, The Corporate Mind. Could you tell us more about that and what made you decide to pivot into this area and leave the finance world?
Yeah, I've kind of still got one foot in. But after when I was pregnant with my daughter, I started to have panic attacks and suffered really badly with anxiety, unhealthy levels of anxiety. And so that started my journey in about 2016. And then in 2018, I attended a mental health first aid course, and it just blew my mind. I thought, why didn't somebody teach me this when I was at school? Why didn't I know all of this? This is just life skills, to recognize these emotions and how we're feeling and the physical symptoms that are telling us that we've got something going on. Mostly it's stress. And recognizing what those signs and symptoms are, recognizing what the triggers are, and having some techniques into how to deal with them. So once I became a mental health first aider in the workplace, I still started to experience anxiety and panic attacks in the office. And so very, very quickly. By 2019, I was in JP Morgan at the time. I started to really sort of look into this in a bit more detail and understand what was going on. And as it opened my eyes to people's suffering in the workplace, I was walking around the office and I could see in people's faces the strain and the stress on them. And then more and more hearing about people with burnout getting signed off, people having breakdowns, heart attacks in the office, you know, young, healthy people having heart attacks. So I recognized that this was not just an issue that I was having. There was tons and tons of people in my network alone who were struggling. So at this stage, my daughter was about 2.5. She'd started to go to a preschool. I didn't feel comfortable about that at all. I wanted to be with her. She's the only daughter I was going to have. Sadly, I left it too late to have more children. So she's what I've got. I want to spend as much time with her as possible. So we managed, my husband and I managed to carve out a lifestyle that really worked for us. That meaning, you know, I could retire at 40 and do something like this more as a hobby than anything else, something that I really care passionately about. And that's teaching other people about their mental health and particularly workplace stress and anxiety. So that's what I do now. You know, it's my business, but I like to call it my hobby because I get so much enjoyment out of it. But I teach mental health first aid courses. I teach mental health awareness. I go into companies and deliver talks on my own experience with mental health and motherhood and just really spread the word and try and normalize that these are just human emotions. We all go through it. We need to be able to recognize it and, you know, create a lifestyle for us where we can be happy and healthy and at peace with who we are. And not live with this inner conflict that often comes with working in a very stressful, competitive, hierarchical environment. And I write in my blog about that conflict, about, you know, going to work and putting that mask on, that face, but inside not really feeling like it's you and just putting on an act. So in the end, that's what broke me, really, was this conflict of work and you know, the new mum that I was. So that's what really started the corporate mind. I called it the corporate mind because I had a corporate mind and forgot about, you know, the real Anne that I was. And the balance had basically got too much in the corporate favour. So, yeah, that's what I do now. And it gives me the freedom to homeschool my daughter, travel the world. We do a lot of world schooling. I just spent a couple of months in Egypt. We're planning now our road trip around Europe. And this sort of what you would call a digital nomad, which, you know what that is. You're doing a lot of that yourself. It's this freedom that my career in the financial services industry gave me. You know, I earned a lot of money. I was really sensible with that money. I had other pipelines of income, so I always had a plan B to fall back on. I realized in the end that I had a choice, so I never felt trapped, certainly towards the final years of my career. I knew that at any point I could go and I'd be okay. Now, it took me about 5 years to get to that point of realizing that, wow, I need to get out of this situation. It's not healthy for me. And actually taking the final step or leap, as it was. So it did take work to get there. But if you go through your career and you don't recognize these niggles, these symptoms of when you're perhaps coming down with a lot of colds or sore throats or aching joints, backache, things like that, headaches, not sleeping well. All of these things are your body's way of telling you, slow down, eat properly, sleep properly, get some fresh air and sunshine, and stop working too hard.
I love that. Yeah. And mental health has always been a topic that previously that was just kind of swept under the rug, but now people are starting to speak about it more, and it's becoming more and more okay to speak about it, especially in the workplace. But it's still kind of a taboo subject. not everyone wants to open up and be vulnerable, because at the end of the day, they're going to be judged for it. Especially men, because they don't want to be seen as weak. So I think men also suffer from a lot of these mental health issues as well. So I love that you're putting yourself out there for this and speaking up for people that do suffer from this, because at the end of the day, corporate is very stressful, finance is stressful. And if you're not looking after your mental health, then it's also going to affect your health in the long run as well.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have mental health separate from our physical health. It's the same thing. It's just our health. And often I refer to mental health as stress. That's the main trigger of poor mental health. And everybody in their life, whether you work in the financial industry or not, has some form of stress. And how you're able to cope with that stress, how resilient you are, really depends on your unique set of life experiences, your background, your upbringing, your family situation, and so on. And then you add that into a very stressful workplace situation, or even a toxic workplace situation, and people react differently. So some people manage stress better than others, but certainly everybody gets stressed, and anybody is at risk of poor mental health. So about 1 in 4 people each year experience poor mental health. It is normal, and there is still a lot of stigma around it, and we should be kind to each other and appreciate that, you know, when things get too much, we need a bit of time out to take care of ourselves and our overall health. So there's a lot of stigma still, absolutely, in the workplace around talking about mental health. So let's talk about stress, because nobody minds talking about stress. I think people like to wear their stress as a bit of a badge of honor. So if you're still feeling that stigma, talk about stress instead. And then maybe, you know, during my course, certainly, we talk about the much more serious side of mental health. So we talk about suicide. We talk about why it's important to talk about suicide, because, again, it's a very taboo subject. People don't like to talk about it. But that's another topic that we must cover, and we must, you know, give people permission to talk about how they're feeling. So, yeah, it's really important. And I've loved going down this journey. I'm still doing it after 4 years. So it's certainly something I feel very passionately and strong about.
I love it. And yeah, I think it's such an important topic as well. And I love that you're doing this. So we're coming to the end of the podcast. You've already answered the 21-year-old self question. So I'm just going to go on to the quick fun fire questions then. What would be your favorite quote?
Probably I like a Gandhi quote. He said, well, supposedly he said, who knows who really said it? Happiness is when you think, what you think, what you see, and what you do are in harmony. Mm. And that's always meant a lot to me, because you can put on an act, you know, you can even say the right things, make, you know, fake it till you make it. But really, you've got to do all three of those things to really feel contented and at peace with yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a cliche, but be real, be true to yourself. And that's what will bring you happiness in the end.
I love that. That's so true. So, so true. Favorite book?
I think the book that really changed things for me health-wise was, and I think I read this in 2020, was Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so with anxiety, it has a really negative impact on your sleep. Now, sleep is like the air that we breathe and the food and the water that we consume. It's necessary. You know, sleep needs to be one of your top priorities. Now, reading this book helped me understand the science behind that, and it was just a fascinating read. So I'd recommend that to anybody, Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, and just start having earlier nights would be my suggestion.
Okay, amazing, amazing. Yeah, sleep is so important. I know if I don't sleep, then I become a moody person, and I feel like I just can't perform at my best either. So sleeping is...
That's the important part to pick out here, is about performance, business performance and productivity and innovation. you know, those, even those things are impacted by your sleep. So even if you don't care about, you know, your physical health, think about your business results and think about your clients and how important your sleep is for your clients.
So true, so true. And I also like to say, I love to call it beauty sleep, because it also keeps you beautiful as well. It keeps the skin looking good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, Anne, well, once again, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I know my listeners will love hearing your story as well.
Well, they can reach out to me anytime if they want to have a chat about anything I've spoken about. I'm sure you're going to share my contact details. I'm more than happy to hear from people. Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to chat with you again.
Thank you, and you too. Bye-bye.